Light is all around us. From the morning's first rays of sun to the waning glow of a crescent moon. From the torches of our ancestors to the glowing screens of our mobile devices. Light is our guide, our timekeeper, and our guardian. Light shows us where to go and how to move. It teaches us how the world works and how to react. It helps us comprehend our reality. It lets us see. And there's nowhere where this is more apparent than when you're at a concert, listening to your favorite band, and the lighting designer is firing on all cylinders.
Hey, welcome back to the Light Side Podcast. It's been a long time, but we're finally back at it. I found some time to actually release an episode, and I'm excited to be back on the air, if you will. I do want to give a few shout-outs and make a few announcements before we get started here. Luke Stratton Designs LLC has been rebranded as the Lightside LLC. We're growing, and our keyboards and LPC software packages are kind of taken off, to put it bluntly. And my wife, B, has been helping a lot actually make keyboards and kind of take on some of the other responsibilities. And it's been amazing. So thank you so much for all the support. If you're interested in those products, check them out at thelightside.co. Also, I want to give a shout out to Jeb Fields. So about a year ago, I was slated to go do a tour with Thievery Corporation, and I got a call and that the Smashing Pumpkins needed a fill-in lighting director for some personal reasons. And, you know, I being a huge Pumpkins fan growing up, I hopped on the opportunity, and I got on a plane like the next day, and fast forward to a year later, I'm the lighting director for Smashing Pumpkins. So it's been a pretty wild ride. But Jeb stepped up to the plate, and he's the Light Side's first operator. He's out running a Thievery Corporation show that him and I programmed together down at Pulse Lighting in Nashville, and it's been pretty awesome. And I'm really excited to announce that he's actually going to be running his first Red Rock show. And that happens at the end of this month, end of May. So definitely go check out our work at Red Rocks. It should be pretty awesome. I also want to give a shout out to all the Patreon subscribers that have signed up, even with the kind of hiatus of the podcast. Just going to name them off here real quickly. Adam, Baruch, Brian, Dennis, Glenn, Graham, James, Carl, Kendall, Learn Stage Lighting, Nolref, Ramesh, Rob, Ryan, and Scott. Guys, thank you so much for signing up. Sorry I hadn't had more episodes for you, but it's been a crazy year. But we're back at it now, so. My guest this episode is not a lighting designer. Instead, we are talking with Sachem Arvidsson of the Flaming Lips. He's the video, I guess, director, you could say. He does a lot of really cool LED stuff. But I saw his set at a festival I was working last year, and he kind of blew me away, and I grabbed him after the set and said, "Hey man, I got to talk to you. I got to run this podcast. You know, I don't know anything about video, you know, show me the ways." And he did. So for all you lighting guys who are thinking about getting into video, this is the path that I took, was by talking to Sachem and learning about Resolume and all that fun stuff. So I hope you guys all enjoy this episode. Okay, welcome to the Light Side. I'm with Sachem Arvidsson. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yes.
Nice work.
He is the LED artist and general, what did you say, video guru for the Flaming Lips?
There's many weird titles thrown around, but I'll take that one.
Sure. Yeah. I guess, let's just dive in from the beginning. What's your very beginning interaction with visuals and music?
Very beginning interaction with visuals and music. Really, I mean, I've basically been obsessed with music since fairly early age, and everything has kind of revolved around that. And
like so many of us.
Yes. But I was more on the audio side of things for a long time. I was a DJ and stuff when I was a kid. Used to like throw parties with friends. Got into production and stuff from that. And
were you in the rave days, that kind of culture?
Yes, in the way back in the mid-late 90s, California.
Yeah.
Underground little beach raves and
yeah, I was a drum and bass DJ for years.
So, yeah, techno and drum and bass. That's what I did. So yeah, like got real into the audio production and just sound system stuff and everything like that. From that experience, and basically moved back to San Francisco when I was about 19. Got dropped out of school and just started doing whatever I could to learn more of that. Started. Working in production, doing like live sound gigs, all that, and then worked in San Francisco for like years doing that, and you know, touched on lighting and stuff like that here. But at that point, it wasn't, you know, where my head was at.
Any schooling related?
Not related to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had like one year of maybe it would technically be a music major at UC Santa Cruz before I just realized that I would have been wasting a shitload of money to not really know what I wanted to be getting out of that at that point in my life.
That was probably a smart move.
Yeah. But then the first real kind of diving into the lighting thing is when I moved to Austin, Texas, a few years after that. One of my best friends from those like rave days, who actually used to do visuals at parties and stuff like that, still like a lot of my inspiration in that world comes from him, like back when we were teenagers or whatever.
What year is this roughly?
This would be now 2005, 2006.
Okay.
I was in Austin, Texas, and he had always been in the video and production and all that kind of world. And he was one of the first employees at a company called Element Labs, which was like kind of the beginning like phases of the whole like crossover between lighting and video kind of world, where it was the first kind of beginnings of mapping a whole stage out as a giant video screen and doing that whole thing. So they had the things called the Versa Tubes.
Is that like a product?
Yeah. So that was like the first like really popular like diffused linear LED product. So
yeah,
it was like
okay.
the 1 meter sticks.
Yeah.
And that was like the hot shit for every big like lighting designer for stuff for a while. So like got to be thrown into that world immediately, like just being a tech out on the Grammys and like weird TV sets.
So just
in
helping
New York and
helping set them up mostly.
So I started basically working at that company and I just got hired on as like a, you know, a shop guy, repair tech, like run their returns department and fix stuff and all that. And then very immediately got thrown into like everything else because it was, you know, just a startup company trying to cover their. I think it was like the second day I was there, the owner of the company came in. He's like, what are you doing today? I think we have to get you a plane ticket to New York. The Today Show has all this stuff fucked up on it and you got to go fix it. I'm like, I just saw these things for the first time like a couple days ago.
Well, would you say that you've always been a technical person, so it came naturally to you?
For sure, yeah. I've always been, you know, obsessed with, like, electronics and taking shit apart.
A tinkerer
for my entire life, for sure, yeah. So, a lot of stuff with that world of things just kind of came natural, and I really, like, loved it and kind of fell into that, just the idea of the mapping everything and, you know, the just that crossover.
Do you remember what software you were using back then? Or they were using, I should say.
There was a lot of proprietary software then. Mm-hmm. It was a program called Raster Mapper that was like their proprietary software that you'd draw this stuff on like basically a screen grid and then like hit the send button to like load up this serial connection to some crazy expensive processor.
And
it's kind of amazing how far it's come from how much stuff you needed then and what you could accomplish to.
So what happened next? Did you move into more of like an operation design kind of role or?
Really that whole time at that company, I was just kind of a tech and I ended up doing a lot of on-site tech stuff because I had a lot of, you know, production experience and knew my way around, you know, showing up at a pre-production on a, something like that. So got to start traveling a lot, but yeah, it was really just like a, a tech. I would go, you know, commission stuff when people bought a big system and were setting it up for the first time, or a tour was starting that was, you know, had rented $500,000 worth of stuff or whatever, and go out and do that.
Where'd you go after the Austin gig?
Basically, it was straight to the Flaming Lips with a little bit of a crossover. So sure. I basically met all of them through that job. We basically
did they like hire your company out?
Yes, but in like a weird, more funny, like slightly personal way. As like a just a crazy friend of ours who also does like LED projects and weird Burning Man art and stuff like that, happened to meet Wayne, the singer from the Lips, backstage at Bonnaroo, and was pitching an idea for LEDs floating around in balloons and whatever he had at the time. Wayne's like, no, I'm not really interested in that. What I want to do is build this circle video screen out of LEDs, like the brightest thing possible. You know, like either drew up a little sketch or just described it. And he's like, oh, well, you should call up my friends in Austin. They can do something like that for you. And yeah, he literally wrote down a phone number for one of us on a napkin backstage at Bonnaroo, and actually felt like
Wayne called you guys,
followed through with that. Yeah. Like when he got back to Oklahoma City 2 days later. So yeah, I was at like work that day. Got a message. Yeah, this guy Wayne from the Flaming Lips says he wants to like come in and see if we can design something.
And was that like an exciting call for you? Did you have no idea who they were?
Oh no, that was an exciting call for me. I wasn't like a super fan or anything like that, but I had already, you know, had a couple of their records and loved them, and yeah, loved their, you know, their production and all that. Everything is so, mm-hmm. is so crazy. So I was definitely already a fan.
So then you're now working for the Flaming Lips in a like tech capacity, or were you right to being involved with design and whatnot?
So no, that first thing was basically, you know, Wayne drove down that day from Oklahoma City, saw a couple little like demo screens that we had in the shop of what was available. And he's like, okay, well, you think, you know, he had a napkin sketch. You think we can do this? Like, oh yeah, we'll start designing something. He's like, all right, well, I'll drive back tonight. I'll go get a check and a couple of my guys. We'll rent a Penske truck and we'll just drive back down here and we'll start building it. I'm like, okay.
That's well, awesome.
Yeah, it's like nothing on that level, you know, because all that stuff was super expensive back then. So it's pretty much everything else was like, you know, 2-3 people in between any band you're working with,
sure.
and like, you yeah. know, getting a couple $100,000 worth of gear to
do something. Were they buying the gear?
They were buying the gear.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So yeah, the Flaming Lips pretty much, like, aside from the normal like lighting package stuff, pretty much own everything like that, and have for a long time. But yeah, he followed through with that too. Was back in a couple days with the mm-hmm. truck. We didn't even have a place at our work to even build anything like that. So we ended up in my friend's backyard, who had one of the Quonset hut structures that mm-hmm. had like just enough ceiling height to build this circle truss inside there and start building stuff. Everyone's friends were, you know, in the house soldering cables, because we didn't have time to get those custom from the normal places we'd be able to get them from in time and all that stuff. But that was the first kind of introduction. I'm like, wow, this is, I just, yeah, definitely like connected with that. Like, this is the way it should be done on this level. Like, hands-on and just like straight, you know, the people what they people like doing the show getting exactly what they want.
And sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of disconnect in this industry where, you know, management, and I guess some artists aren't as involved, but it must be cool to work with an artist that has a very strong visual creative direction. You know?
Totally. I mean, yeah, Wayne, by his own admission, is like at least as much of a visual artist as he has ever been a musician. Like, he's mm-hmm. a creative director just as much as he is like a singer in the band.
Yeah. So what year was this? The truck drive, we'll call it.
That was 2007.
Uh-huh. And you've been with him ever since, right?
Well, basically, there was a few years. So it was 2010 I actually started touring with them.
Mm, okay.
So yeah, we did like another big project with them, like designing another circle, a 50-foot truss circle that went around the original one. Mm-hmm. That was like 2009. And that company in Austin had kind of made some bad decisions and was getting acquired for not much money and going downhill and all that. So mm-hmm. that was all happening, and it finally just kind of worked out. Blaine was like, hey, we need someone to like,
oh, nice. Okay.
Be out with us and, you know, make all this stuff work.
And were you doing content with them from the start?
No, not at all. So okay. I started with them as like just a tech, like,
yeah.
Yeah, I was, you know, an expert on all this gear that they already had and sure. were touring with, so.
Yeah, and then at some point they were like, hey, man, like, this guy's not working out. Like, what do you got? Like, what was the steps to becoming a creative director, if you will?
Really, so it was the transition of the Flaming Lips kind of going back to being more of a full live band than they had been in probably, like, around 15 years before that. So there was... in 1999, they released the Soft Bulletin. You know that record?
Yes, yeah.
So it's this crazy, you know, Casio orchestra mm-hmm. masterpiece that is all Stephen Droz, like, playing everything on that record, who's technically has always been the drummer of the Flaming Lips. Mm-hmm. So every live show, everything before that, he was, you know, behind the kit.
Sure.
Playing drums, and Wayne was playing a little guitar and singing and various other things going on. So they put out this record, then started figuring out what they were going to do to tour with it, and quickly figured out that there was no way that Steven yeah. could just play drums and
yeah, of course
have any semblance of this music happening
yeah.
without him, you know, jumping back and forth between keyboards, guitars, all that. So they started this method of playing along to videos. So the first tour was VHS tapes.
Mm-hmm.
Of video and audio of Steven playing drums.
Oh, really?
To every song along
it
with
it was
like
the audio feed, like RCA off of VCR deck.
Exactly.
Oh my, that's awesome.
Yeah. And
like screw time code. We're just
exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It was yeah, stack of VHS tapes.
How many tapes?
I don't know. I wasn't there to really witness.
Sure.
This is all from stories.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
So yeah, by the time I got there in 2010, it had evolved. Technically a lot further to the mini DV tapes.
Sure, okay. But they're still just playing.
Still the exact format. So then it was basically, what, one mini DV tape and a backup.
I mean, that's not that long ago.
No. But. Yeah, this was, 8 years ago.
It's
still.
I think it's funny that they spend like tens of thousands of dollars on LED products when they just have like a little Sony mini DV.
Totally, thing. Yeah. Yeah, with this crazy processor to convert it from like the analog RCA into like the whole digital signal.
It's going out to some huge PA at a festival.
And we also, there was the way we had built the screen was kind of wired upside down from the normal way you do it, because it was on a truss with these weird different heights of panels. So the best way to lay it out was to like start at the bottom and wire up all the different lengths. But the processors were so basic that you couldn't flip that content in the processor.
Mm-hmm.
So those mini DV tapes had every video on the player upside down because that was the only way.
Oh, man.
To get it into, so there was like some writing at the bottom. It was the drummer controlling it at that point. There was some writing at the bottom, like right side up, and then everything else was the content flipped upside down that would be mapped to these video screens. So that was basically, you know, my whole gig at that point was just like keeping this stuff working, rewiring it to like make more sense, touring all this stuff. And then it was... Basically, 2012 was the big kind of transition of like the format of everything. So it started out, actually, I finally like got them to basically be doing the same thing, but I had started messing around with Resolume, so I got them to replace the mini DV with Resolume with just all the clips loaded in. Sure. You didn't have to like... If you change the set list, you wouldn't have to fast forward for 3 minutes while Wayne talks. And
For our pure lighting listeners, Resolume is like maybe the premier VJing program. Is that what you, how would you describe it?
It's seeming to like more and more be the standard. It's like it's like the MA of MA of the video world at this point. I think at that point it was like they just kind of released the newer version.
So was it that you knew Resolume and you were like, "Hey, we should use this," or was the tour using it and you like had to learn it, like, or was it kind of both?
No, that was like me just kind of. I'm always, you know, just into whatever, you know, latest things are happening, and always
I've got this thing from the lab that I want to show you guys.
Exactly, So it was always in that world, and it's something I'd been playing around with, just and we just kind of like reconfigured all the video screens to like do a kind of a different setup. So I'm like, okay, instead of like trying to engineer these like tapes that map out this shitty composite signal to like do all that, let's just like ditch the middleman a little bit and just like run it straight off the computer the way I would run it, like testing it.
So yeah, so you were loading in those videotapes into Resolume.
At that point, it was like mostly the same videos that would just now be like
just using a real, you know, media server, if you will.
And then kind of shortly after that, they basically released The Terror, which was one of their crazy experimental records that was just very electronic, a lot like different, a lot different of a format. And kind of that's when we decided to just, you know, we played one show in Austin that was this insane show. It was like a kind of like an outdoor, like not quite daytime, but just like early evening festival, a bunch of families out on the thing. And they decided for that set, they'd play this entire experimental, very dark record, like start to finish, instead of like the normal greatest hit sets.
Sure.
I'm sure freaked out a lot of people.
Yeah.
But that was basically the first time that instead of those tapes, that was me like on the computer, actually just going straight from Resolume and like mixing stuff.
Oh, because so it was like, hey, we don't have the content for this stuff, like just right.
And
crazy.
It's, and it's more like, you know, just fully playing live. Like all those tapes were like, you were locked into Race for the Prize was 3 minutes and 40 seconds every night, because that's what it is on the tape. It starts.
Wait, so was Resolume doing the audio playback for those?
During that brief transition period, it actually was. So it was the drummer with the Resolume computer with the audio interface that was actually going to the PA and all that. So it'd be like backing tracks. And
yeah, but you don't do that now, right?
No, none of that now. Like once in a while, I mean, the beauty of it now is there's seven people in the band on stage now. Two of them have, you know, sampler pads and various stuff. So like a lot of that stuff was like, you know, playing soft bulletin songs, like, there's a whole weird orchestra section and little trills and like all this stuff happening that you could never really do with, you know, four or five people just playing normal instruments. But now with all that combination of samplers and all that, like,
but it's
kind of
not,
for the first time ever, they can actually just play all these songs fully live and like have the right sounds and like have it actually work. So yeah, in that transition, everything has gone to being.
So, when, I mean, if they're doing a song like that off soft bulletin, are you, like, time-coded for the video, or do you just press play at the right time and nudge it?
Everything is pretty free-form at this point, so I just have, like,
But the audio and video aren't synced anymore.
Not in a way of it being, like, synced through an entire video.
Sure,
I do audio triggers and MIDI and all sorts of stuff.
We're going to get to that. Don't you worry.
There's all sorts of stuff to actually, like, sync it up in real time, but there's no time code, like full 3 minute video that goes along to the whole song or anything like that anymore. Sure. It's all just broken down to its basic components at this point, I'd say.
Very cool. I'm going to check this real quick because it's recording, but be nervous. Okay. okay. So what are some of your like early or even current, visual inspirations? Do you have other designers, or content creators that you're into, or do you have like a nature or visual artists that you're into? Like, what's your shtick?
Let's see. I'd say the very first thing, going back all the way to like some of my earliest memories, is I finally moved to like the middle of nowhere in Alaska when I was like super little kid. That's where a lot of my first memories are from, and we could actually watch the Northern Lights.
Awesome.
From the front porch. So like some of my first memories are from like just sitting there doing that. I think that organic kind of feel of things is definitely still like something that's ingrained in my head. There's just lots of various things throughout my life, I guess. My friend Jason Micah, who is actually the guy I was talking about before, he got me the job at Element Labs, got me into this whole kind of world in the first place. He used to do crazy projection visuals at like parties we used to throw, or bigger parties in the Bay Area and stuff like that. And he always did a ton of video feedback. That was one of his favorite effects.
Oh, yeah. So he's like got a camera at maybe front of house or somewhere on stage?
Yeah. So he'd have a camera and tapes and various things, and then just have a crazy old analog video mixer. And
Nice.
Doing feedback stuff and like joystick controllers and weird funky stuff.
A little Roland controller or something?
This was probably even before those were around, like when I was first seeing him doing this stuff. So he used to work for like an AV company, so he'd probably like borrow some crazy expensive
corporate switcher.
Exactly, yeah.
Totally misuse it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that kind of is something I still like. A lot of my show right now for the lips is all built on kind of live like feedback effects and kind of generative real-time stuff that you can actually play like an instrument as much as possible and make it fun. Inspiration.
Sure.
Those are like the first two images that come into my head, but definitely, constant inspiration from everywhere.
A nature answer. It wasn't like Mario or something. Though that would probably be one of my influences.
Hey, that's a huge one for me too.
Yeah.
That's the first thing I did when like I started trying to learn all the pixel mapping software and stuff. It's like map out Tetris to like a screen and like do all the,
You know, it's funny you say that because, you know, I'm in town at the Capitol Theater and they've got this really like very geometric truss rig.
Yeah.
And I have a look called Tetris where each one is a different, very saturated color.
Of course.
Just like Tetris.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So for all you guys listening, you know, just a reminder that this episode was recorded about a year ago, but almost serendipitously last weekend, I was at the Capitol Theater with Dopapod for their kind of big comeback end of hiatus show. Well, I really wanted to, A, make this show very special. If any of you have been to the Capitol Theater, there's a bunch of projections on the wall, and I remember when I was there with Motet, like, the band came up to me after, like, oh, man, the projections were so cool. And I was like, well, cool. I had nothing to do with them. I kind of let the house guys do their thing. So this time I really wanted to, like, you know, dive off into the whole live video kind of thing. So I spent the month prior learning Resolum and building a Resolum file. And I really have Sachem to thank for kind of the inspiration for doing that. I think if I hadn't seen his show at Okeechobee with Flaming Lips, this probably never would have happened. But, you know, to kind of tie it all back together, when I was editing this, I realized, well, I mean, one of my favorite moments of the video projections from that Capitol Theater Dopapod show is that I made a look using the Tetris lighting look, and I combined it with some, you know, kind of like a live stream of someone playing Tetris, the old NES version of Tetris. And I mapped that into the, like, coves of the wall, and then masked over just kind of like a Tetris-y pattern. And just to hear this episode a year later and realize like that was one of the big things that we talked about, it was actually kind of cool. So thank you, Sachem, and let's get back to the episode.
Okay, so in my Googling searches, I heard about this project called the Story Wall.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Can you tell us about that?
So that was, I was working, doing stuff with a lighting company that was actually in this building a few years ago and just doing kind of weird...
The building that we're in Brooklyn?
Exactly, yeah. And was doing some weird designs and stuff with them, and so we decided to collaborate on this booth for like a little design show that was happening in Brooklyn. So
like
I just,
an art show?
It's more like... almost like a trade, like a local kind of trade show, but all like basically like designers of every sort of sort. So they were like a, you know, like a chandelier, like lighting design kind of company. So I ended up just doing my own thing with them a little bit, collaborating and like building a weird little room full of like LED art and weird little pieces. And the one of the owners of Story, which is this crazy store in Manhattan, decided to go to that show and saw one of my pieces and got my contact info and called me up and said she wanted to commission me to like do a crazy display in their store. And they have this crazy store where they basically turn over the entire store, like shut down for a week or two, reconfigure the entire store, and then like open up again every few months.
Oh, nice.
So it's like this, every time they do, it's this different theme and a different, you know, they have this main wall when you walk in that's a different kind of installation every time. Okay. So it was basically, yeah.
So can you describe what it might look like to our listeners?
That one was funny. We were just talking about Tetris because it was basically like a ton of Tetris-y kind of shapes. Sure. It was like crosses and little L's and straight pieces
was
and
it,
all that.
Was it just a video wall or was it like it was – I mean the picture I saw seemed like it was video stuff integrated into a carved out wood wall. Is that about right?
Yeah. So it was like a CNC cut panel with all these kind of shapes cut into it. And then it's probably, more work than it ever should have been, but I basically...
That's all good art is.
Yeah. Built a little mini light box that went behind each one of those shapes. So each one of those shapes was a little LED light box with the LED strips cut out into that exact shape and a diffuser in front and the whole case and all that. And basically the whole idea was that for it to be interactive. So people could walk into the store and there's a little... control panel with the buttons that had each kind of shape. So you basically choose a type of shape and then you'd have knobs and you could play around with the color schemes of those shapes. Yeah.
Is it still there?
It is not. I have the controller still for it right over here. Nice. You can see what the controller looked like. But yeah, like I said, they changed it. Yeah. It's been like probably 30 things since then.
So I guess with that in mind, can we talk about some of the LED stuff that you actually use? I mean, do you have like a particular, I mean, like I really want to talk about the LED curtains, rope stuff that Flame Ellipse use.
Yep.
But like what, I guess what's your favorite like LED product? Or what, do you have one that you use that's like your main go-to in your toolbox?
At this point now, it's one that basically built myself, like a custom board to run everything.
Is that like a Teensy thing, or like what's the technology behind it?
Yeah, it does run on Teensy, which is like basically, you know what that is, but for people who don't, it's basically like Arduino, the same thing, just a very high-powered Arduino.
Tiny computer that you can buy, you know, for very cheap online.
Yeah, so basically I made like a custom circuit board, and protocol and stuff that basically uses Teensys to network out, you know, whatever size LED installation you want to do.
So like the rope or curtain that what do you call it for the Flame Ellipse?
We call it many different names. It's
the crazy squid Cthulhu monster.
We call them video babies. Okay. It would be the main touring name, which. Yeah. Yeah, started out from the very first version of doing any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Was, you know, getting like 10 strands or something at that point. It was one of those, you know, times in between touring for a while when I was at home in the lab, like, all right, let's work on some new stuff. Sure. So I got like 10 of these LED strands and started figuring out how to do the DIY stuff.
This whole topic just blows my mind. So, like, is there some kind of serial method so that you can wire? I mean, for our listeners, each one of these is a long, like maybe 20-foot piece of LED rope.
Yeah.
But where every 6 inches or something, there's a pixel?
Oh, no. There's 60 pixels per meter. So
there's a lot.
Yeah.
And each one is individually controllable. It's not like the whole strand is, it's not like rope light where it's like all green. It's
exactly.
Like
yeah.
You so put video on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So in the lighting terms, like each 15-foot strand is about two universes worth of. But,
So let's start with the. I have so many questions about this. Let's start with the wiring.
Dig into it.
Is it serial? Like how do you wire one strand?
The ones that I like to use the best have a protocol called SBI, which is basically just a clock and data line. So it's basically two wires to control everything, and it's basically just a very high speed.
Are you saying it's two wires for the whole strand?
It's two wires for the data. It's four wires altogether. So there's a
four of like two universes of data, like DMX data.
There's two universes of data going down two wires.
That's awesome. And so it's just you're saying it's like running at a really quick clock, and then each LED knows what to listen to.
It's basically like a I forget the proper term for it, but it's basically yeah, each pixel takes its information, passes the stream on.
Yeah. So is that, I guess I would have to like actually look at the product, but is like, is there something like, how does each LED know which number it is?
It's basically just their order in the stream. So basically, mm-hmm. each time that data stream hits one LED, mm-hmm. it's altered by the time it gets to the next one.
Okay. So can you tell like by maybe the current changing or the voltage changing?
No, it's actually the way that the LED will send it out to the next one.
So
the whole stream actually from LED to LED and then.
So the fact that you
I can grab you a strip if you want to.
I do want to see it. Yeah, maybe after we get through this here. So, like, since you wired them all, how many? Do you have like a lot of problems with it breaking?
We have had like many series of problems in our iterations of this over. You know, really, this is from that like 2012-2013 era is when we first started playing around with this stuff and, you know, having 10 strands on Arduino and making a button for it.
Like, okay, so...
So the video-controlled like version of that was a pipe dream at that point.
Of course,
and then we've just kind of been getting better and better at it since then.
Is it one Arduino per strand?
It is one teensy per eight strands is the way...
And then
the board works at this point.
And then how do you get the media into that? Like, walk me through the signal chain from Resolume to getting into the teensies.
Let's see. Well, the beauty of all the technology and everything now is that it's basically just a straight Ethernet connection from Resolume. Well, all right, there is a little bit more of a signal chain. Resolume goes into spout or siphon, which are basically like video sharing program. It's not even a program. It's like programs can utilize
like
spout or siphon.
If
you're on Mac, it's called siphon. If you're on PC, it's called spout. But it's basically like a video sharing between applications program.
Okay.
So right now it goes from Resolume to either one of those, depending on if you're Mac or PC, into a program called Processing.
Mm-hmm.
Have you
heard of that? No, I'm a lighting guy, so this is like... it's all lighting, but yeah.
Yeah. So Processing is a super cool software that's been around for a while, but it's been getting better and better. But it's kind of like makes it as straightforward as possible for, you know, just artists and people to get into coding stuff like that. So it's basically like mainly made for visuals. Like you can have like a couple lines of code, circle 50-50 and it'll draw a circle on the screen and then you can have it move and do stuff like that. So it's great for like interactive art projects and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it also has stuff built in where you can do something like that, where you take in the signal from Resolume and then you can basically write a way to send it out to anything on the network, and that's
very cool.
That's basically basically what it is.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So we met at Okeechobee.
Yes.
And I was there doing site lighting in Thievery Corporation, and so like thinking about that stage that we were on.
Yeah.
So you've got a massive video wall the festival provides, and you guys brought in your curtain, whatever you called it.
Yeah. So that was a pretty like stripped down show for us because it was kind of in the middle of everything, and so we could just like very quickly do one layer of the curtain kind of hanging straight down.
And then you also had the LED rope on the unicorn.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
And is that, do you have like a wireless one? I know he didn't go out in the crowd for this, but.
Yes, there is an insane wireless.
So it's just
setup.
Like a little like WAN card on there or Wi-Fi card so that you can send. This whole project blows my mind.
Well, that's what it's intended to do. That's our only purpose in the world.
Yeah. I guess walk me through like when you come into a festival like that. Okay, hey, here's the house video products. Here's mine. How do you like get them all talking?
Well, usually with festivals like that, there's a great like, you know, in-house video crew that's out there that will basically just, you know, they'll have gotten something on the rider. It's pretty standard. Like you just have an HDMI connection that you plug into your computer.
Yeah. And do they give you a pixel map? Or like a pixel.
Yeah, it's usually, I mean, just going to like a square, like a regular square screen like that. Yeah. There was nothing like
they'll just tell you
on the sides or anything like that. That's easy
enough.
But
if they had side panels, you could have. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, normally when we do festival stuff, we'll just tie into the center screen and let them do whatever iMag or content
on the sides,
and all that. Yeah, like, yeah. We just kind of want it to have it.
Yeah,
want to have it as like the centerpiece of the show.
And then in Resolume, you're just going in and saying like, "Hey, the top section is my stuff. We're adding a panel." Like you would just draw basically
exactly
a square,
yeah, it's just yeah. drawing a little.
And I map. Think I saw on your screen you had a square for the unicorn.
yeah.
So you're basically just sending video all over the thing, and then however you lay out the rope, this is how it gets mapped, right?
Basically, yeah. You're just trying to like match it up,
yeah,
close to some version of its you know physical yeah. form. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it's not like someone is looking at those pixel strands and saying like, "Well, that doesn't look. That's not the right shape." Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Okay, well, I mean, I was going to say let's get nerdy, but I feel like we started there. So, okay, so I want to know about, especially for guys like me who are lighting guys maybe looking into getting into video.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to know about your rig. So you know, you're running Resolume, you're running 5 or 6?
I'm running 6 now. I just finally kind of transitioned.
Arena?
Over. Arena 6, yeah. For all that mapping
And
stuff to do all the separate outputs and all that stuff, Arena is pretty necessary for me.
And then you have just on a laptop?
Just on a laptop, yeah. So
what kind of laptop? I'm in the market, so, you know.
For the Lips show computer now, I made the evil switch over to the PC, so I have a little...
Man, MA is the same way, man. It hurts. But, you know, you got to do it.
Yeah, so I have like a little... mini Alienware gaming laptop that has a
decent graphics card.
It's like a 1060 graphics card. It doesn't need to be like the top line. It still kills it for my show. But
is that because you're not doing like crazy high resolution because of all the LED stuff?
Exactly, yeah. Everything we've done has always stayed fairly low resolution, partly because most of the stuff I kind of treat as just crazy lighting effects versus like having some crazy 3D rendered video and, you know, some storyline or stuff like that. Like we have a lot of video clips in there, but mostly it's kind of generative, weird content and stuff that kind of treats the whole thing as lighting. So for us, it's always more of like the speed of which things happen and how like connected it feels to the music versus it being some high pixel count. So it's, which is a lot of times like one of the main problems we'll have with the festival video screens is like, it has this, you know, 2000 by 3000 pixel count and can do whatever you want. But like, there's a half second between like when I hit the button and when like that flash shows up on the screen, I'm like, okay, like
that doesn't work. Yeah.
Yeah. As many times I've had to like kind of get that delay into my head and try and hit things
before.
Can
you build that delay into Resolume so that your stuff flips?
You can definitely, there's definitely ways to like,
if you wanted,
to build that in.
Okay. So you've got back to the front of the house deal. You've got your gaming laptop. Do you have any kind of, extra video hardware or is it just straight up like HDMI out of your laptop?
So it's basically for our normal rig. So even at that festival, we had carts on stage as well. They were like LED video carts. So for our normal show, we have those and a matching big main screen that's like hanging on truss.
Yeah.
And that has its own kind of system to take the video signal and send it over a Cat5 cable. Just because that's what we have a snake for. Sure. That's what like you can go into most venues and be like, do you have a Cat5?
Just one line?
It all runs on one line. The video and all the networked LED stuff is just on one line. So yeah, there's lots of different processors for that now, but it's basically like a matching pair that take a regular video input.
Okay.
You know, translate that to...
It's like a rack mount box?
No, it's just like a little like third rack space kind
of thing. And you just plug in HDMI or whatever and it converts it to Ethernet. Yeah. Okay.
And then, the main reason we're still using that is because... all our main video screen is still the stuff from 2007, 10 years ago that we've reconfigured 3 times and are now our video carts and our main hanging screen. But that still runs on that old processor that needs the HDMI input at the stage. So I basically have to convert back and forth versus the other stuff.
So you have a break in and then a break out.
Exactly.
It's Ethernet to stage and then it goes back to HDMI.
Yeah.
At least for now.
Yeah. But for all the strips and stuff like that, like, that's the beauty of that, is that whole thing's been taken out of the equation. Sure. Like, there's no need to convert back and forth.
Okay, so then how about control? I notice you, like me, have a ton of MIDI controllers.
For sure,
a couple keyboards. Can you maybe walk me through each one of them?
So I just have what is also probably the de facto standard for Resolume at this point, which is the APC 40, the Kai.
Yeah, the Mark II.
The Mark II, yes. So the RGB, RGB buttons.
I don't know. I can't imagine you could get by without RGB. Yeah.
I mean, if the possibility is there, you gotta use it.
I just wrote a script for it for the MA.
So really?
You can have RGB lights to control the MA, which is kind of cool. So
on the APC controller?
Yeah, on the APC,
awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. I have that. And
so what do you use that for, like, actually in the show?
So that's basically my main Resolume controller. Mm-hmm. So all the faders are basically mapped to individual
layers, maybe?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the faders on that are layers on Resolume.
So can you explain a layer to, like, someone who doesn't know anything about video?
It's basically same thing as like a channel on an audio console or something like that, where basically,
or is it also like layers in Photoshop?
It is even more like layers in Photoshop. Yeah,
okay.
Where it's basically you have different effects and the ordering of the layers is mm-hmm. very kind of changes everything depending on if one is in front of the other and all mm-hmm. that. So you basically have to like stack those up in the right way, and there's different effects that a layer on top of each other will have.
Sure.
Will have a completely different look depending on what's selected and all that stuff. So it's basically from layer one would be, you know, the furthest back if you're thinking about it that way.
Yeah, okay.
If you put something on layer two and turn it all the way up, you won't see layer one anymore.
So they have like opacity.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, great, okay.
So the faders are all like the opacity of the different layers for the first few, and then I have the last few faders are like different sections of the screen.
Okay.
And the screen versus the curtain and stuff like that. So you can kind of dial in to get more of like a weird 3D kind of effect, like dim down the back screen and have it pop more on the other LEDs that are in front of it and all that kind of stuff.
And then do you have like effects parameters on knobs and stuff?
Yeah. So they have, there's 8 knobs across the top, and those are basically all, constantly controlling one set of parameters. That's like my crazy kind of feedback and effects settings that are just
kind of... Would that be the dashboard?
I'm
brand new to Resolume.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So that is not the dashboard, which is... the dashboard is the controls that will basically change depending on whatever clip you have selected or layer you have selected or anything. Like, basically, you select something, and those 8 knobs correspond to whatever that is if you have them assigned.
Yeah, okay.
So, on the APC, luckily it has 2 sets of 8 knobs. So you basically have the one set that's all the global controls that always do the same thing no matter where you are.
And that would that be like a color shift or a speed, or what kind of things would you have on those knobs?
So a lot of it is for my crazy kind of like feedback instrument sort of thing is basically just a bunch of effects layers and stuff kind of compounded into one. So there's like an XY direction if you're kind of moving stuff around as it's like doing its feedback and floating in and out and stuff like that. And then there's a size for that, and then a bunch of like combination things that are like brightness and saturation. You can go from black and white to
You're just tweaking it
black and white to like blown out color and
And then the actual pads are like clip selection?
On the APC, all the pads are just the just mapped out to exactly what you see on the screen, like the individual clip selection. And then I have another little controller that I use below that. That's a Kai, I think it's called the LPD-8, which is basically just 8 drum pads. They're like Kai MPC style drum pads, which I grew up messing around with those samplers and everything. So that's
I see an old Akai on the wall.
Exactly,
here.
That was my first college loan, I think, went to buy that guy.
My first one was to an Emu.
There you go.
Sampler. Yeah.
There you go.
So what do you do with the pads?
Like, with the pads, so those are like would be my main scenes for every song. So that actually triggers it's called a column in Resolume. So basically if you have a stack of layers vertically, you can select, a key to hit that column, and that'll basically trigger all those things.
Just like Ableton, right? Where you like click
exactly,
it.
Yeah.
and it clicks it all the things in that line.
Exactly. But it's like a
instead of a line,
it's a vertical. It's a vertical version
of
like the
Where
you can have all these different scenes that are all layers playing off each other and ready to go, but you can just trigger all those things at the same time.
So you do have like go-to moves for, you know, say, do you realize it loads these eight, you know, or how many layers do you have?
I have altogether in the set, there's like nine layers, but really content-wise, I'm only ever using about four.
Okay.
Four layers, and then I have the feedback like effects layer. Mm-hmm. And then there's different layers that are just used as like routing to the different sections of screen and all that. So really there's like four
functional,
like mixing content kind of layers and then effects and routing basically on top of that.
So when you, so let's say, do you realize you click for that and it loads all four or nine that you usually use every night, or do you, I mean, how much of that is like improvised?
Mostly, I mean, there's definitely very like set things there, and you know, usually it like starts out experimental and then we'll kind of like lock into like after we do something for a while, kind of lock in to certain things. And do you realize is actually one of the things where I'm like very light. It's just like a couple video clips.
So that was a bad example. Okay.
It's a fine example, but that one's just like a couple video clips and just like run some effect. And it's like, you know, kind of a content that's like some content that's been used on that song, like since before I was around, like some stuff that's been around forever. So I feel like that's just a good thing that still works for that. But yeah, basically every song will have a new set, basically.
Okay.
That'll load up and we'll have a bunch of, you know, mostly it's weird combinations of effects clips and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And content. But yeah, it'll definitely be like, we'll have, you know, a set list of all my different scenes on there and each song.
So like, would you reorder that each day if the set list changed?
In a perfect world,
but you know where they are,
They're just named for each song. And then there's a couple, you know, call them the punt page or whatever. Like, oh shit, I didn't know we were doing this tonight. Like, what can I come up with?
So then, okay, so what else do you have? You've got the APC-40, the Akai pad.
Yeah.
You got some like little keyboards too, right?
Yeah, and that's basically, you know, one of the things I use the most for like the way the setup changes day to day, which is even if we're doing all our own shows and not in a festival, like kind of pride ourselves in being able to fit this insane amount of stuff in like, you know, every size space you can imagine.
Yeah.
Many of them like way smaller than we should ever have any business fitting that much stuff into.
Like the inflatable rainbow just hits the ceiling.
Exactly.
And stuff.
Yeah. So basically, yeah, I just have a number pad that's like my programming pad. I'm like, okay, this needs to go down 30 pixels.
Oh, so it's a pre-show thing mostly.
Mostly. Yes. Yeah. There's times that it's definitely happening during the show, but again, in an ideal world, that would be all.
Yeah,
I can actually see everything happening before the show with time and
adjust
all the so that's just a quick thing to not be, you know, messing around with the numbers on the laptop pad that's like a little further away. It's just kind of a
they look like, for our listeners, they look kind of just like little, I don't know, like 5x5 keyboard, you know.
It's just basically like the number pad from your full size keyboard. And then I have another one that's made by X Keys that's basically a programmable one.
Sure.
That you can basically, you know, have it
control
X or do you can do any combination of keys and just one thing. So
that's mostly programming as well?
That's mostly for like shortcuts for certain things, like that'll hit the key combination to like open the advanced output in Resolume or go to certain marker points in After Effects, stuff like that. Like when making content and stuff like that.
Okay.
So it's just kind of quit any program, you know, just little shortcuts for everything.
Well, that's actually a great segue, because the next thing I wanted to ask about was content. Both the pre-made content, like where do you, you know, how do you do it? Where do you get it from? Do you do it all yourself? And if you do, what are you using to do that? But then also I want to segue that into the audio stuff, because that stuff blew my mind. So.
Awesome.
So first, let's start with the content.
So basically, from a long time before I was around, this guy named George Salisbury, D-Lo Creative is his company, and he's been doing like all the Lips visual stuff, like music videos and packaging everything for a long time. So most anything in our show that is an actual video content, film stuff, with or without crazy effects on it and stuff like that, is all from George's library of stuff that him and Wayne have done over the last 20 years or so. And then most of the stuff at this point in the show that's just kind of crazy, you know, motion effects, video content, stuff like that, that's just kind of shapes moving around and stuff like that, is just stuff that I make in my rudimentary
what do you
knowledge
use?
Of After Effects. Oh, is After the main. Effects.
Yeah. Okay, great. Which a program I've never opened, but I probably will after today, I'm guessing.
It's, yeah, it's a little intimidating. It's still like I know maybe 1% of, you know, things you can do in there, but you can, you know, just watch a couple YouTube tutorials and get started pretty quickly anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I got to say, though, like, I don't know if you haven't seen the Flaming Lips show, like, the content, I've been a lighting guy my whole life. Or in my whole career, I guess. But that show, I was like, there's something about the way that, we're calling it content, but it's mostly just like color explosions and stuff that's interacting with the band. I just thought it went so well with the music, and it wasn't like, hey, this is like from Tron. Like, check out this cool Tron clip that we've like, and I mean, I love Tron, but like, I don't want to see that when I'm seeing and watching a band that's not playing Tron music. You know?
Yeah. 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 I totally agree. Like I'd say, you know, the majority of the time when I see, you know, a big production with video and stuff, the video would be more distracting from whatever's happening with the music versus like really just like accentuating anything or like
Let's take one for example, because maybe you'll know what I'm talking about. There's like a one part in the show where it's almost like the whole back video section is like basically a rainbow exploding, and then as the band is like playing, different colors come through the rainbow. Is that something that you made in After Effects, or is that purely an audio effect?
That's purely all live stuff. So there's another program we haven't touched on yet.
Is further down the rabbit hole.
That is running at every show, which is called Magic, is what it's called for sure, but it's Magic Magic Music Visualizer. Words to say. It's an awesome program that it only costs like $80 or $100. Nice. Basically seems to be developed mainly by one guy, but it's pretty amazing, and it's definitely the best thing I've found out there to be able to take any audio or MIDI input and basically just translate that however you want into like some sort of visual effect, being it triggering an actual video clip or just controlling a shape or anything like that. So basically all those effects that are live generated are me just making patches, and that we can basically choose like a frequency range.
So it's running on your laptop?
Yeah.
And it just feeds into Resolume?
Yeah, so it uses the same stuff we were talking about before. It's the spout or siphon, which is just the method for programs to talk back and forth between each other.
It's like a protocol on your computer routing them back into each other.
Exactly, and that's just basically built into both those programs. So Resolume has that as a native thing. You just, if there's another program on your computer sending something out, it'll just show up as like one of your available clips kind of thing to select. So basically that'll be piped into most every...
And I'm sorry, the name of that program again?
It's Magic. Magic Music Visualizer.
Well, okay, awesome.
It's a hard string of words to say.
Well, I guess with that in mind, then this is by far my favorite part of the whole show is the level of audio integration you have. Being a front of house engineer as well as a lighting guy, I was just like, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
So what... you're using like a kind of like this, so like a 4-channel interface?
Yeah, exactly. So I just have a pretty basic 4-channel USB interface and then kind of work out with Jim, our front of house guy, for individual lines so we can like choose.
Are they mixes or are they individual instruments or a combo?
It's a combo.
Yeah.
But mostly it's individual stuff. Like it'll be, you know, my favorite things, especially for that impact of like, you know, it's connected to everything is like kick and snare, separate lines going in, and then some like the crazy like bass synthesizer stuff.
Yeah, but like before I had really like looked at the front of house, there was one point where I was like, it's not time coded. There's no way he's that good on the button. You know? And I was like, oh, it's audio. That's perfect. Yeah, but whatever. So the kick drum goes into Magic. Usually, or could it also be a Resolume effect?
It could also be a Resolume effect, but from using Magic, you can do so much more kind of granular stuff and like control it so much better that I don't end up using that aspect of Resolume.
Okay.
Also, and if anyone in Resolume is listening right now, one of the main drawbacks in Resolume is if you have a four-channel interface, there's no way to choose channel three controls this parameter in Resolume. It's basically you can choose a stereo input. That input controls everything in Resolume. So that's really one of the places where the magic shines through is, you know, you can choose any frequency from any individual input you have on, even if you have like a 20 channel audio interface, you can choose any of those and have it control whatever you want.
So like on a normal night, you would have kick and snare on one mix. What else might you have on the other ones?
Basically the main things, would be the kick and snare, bass synthesizer stuff where like a lot of, some of the stuff is like kind of oscilloscope, like way you can get it like a waveform kind of effect, and like the crazy low end bass stuff translates best to that, because you can actually like see weird triangle and
with the there's a new the tune happening. On the new record where it's like super low.
There's Unicorns. There should be Unicorns has some crazy like
low
super
bass.
Low sub bass on it, and it's there's a couple other other tracks. How is also another one that has a lot of crazy sub bass. And then I have Wayne's mic in there as a channel, which is also between the combination of him being a fairly quiet singer and the band being so loud on stage, that turns into like an all-purpose mic. That's that's basically everything else happening on the stage can be used from that mic. I was going to say the one technical thing from the rig that I just realized we didn't talk about is along with the audio stuff, a lot of our triggers happen from actual MIDI triggers.
Oh, okay. From stage?
From the stage,
Oh, cool.
So I was talking about the way we're able to do a lot of the songs live now is we have two drummers who also have sampler pads and all that. So I basically take MIDI triggers from those sample pads and have those trigger certain clips directly. Like if there's something, you know, we have a lot of songs where it's like some eighth note kind of thing that's being like repeated continuously throughout the song, actually have that.
So it's it's not audio, it's actually so what's the tech to get that to front of house?
There is a box, I think the company's called IO Connectivity. They basically just make like a little four channel MIDI box that has Ethernet connection on it. So it's basically just
is that coming down the same line?
Yep. It's all on the all on the same line. So
you
just
have a huge computer network.
Exactly, yeah. That's all it is.
That's very cool. So have you gotten into anything where there's maybe specific MIDI program that isn't matching the audio but still coming from them, or is it pretty much the same like eighth note as an eighth note to you?
Well, basically the whole magic from that happens in creating or manipulating a clip to basically match whatever you think that sound should be, like the duration of that sound and you know the feel of it and all that. I kind of try and create a clip that actually goes along with whatever specific sound that is. It's just triggered by the same note instantaneously, so it could be anything that starts then, but if it's just a little clave sound, then it's just something that it's like triggers and goes away instantly. And if it's a longer sound, it'll be something that kind of fades out of the screen. And
are you listening to velocity, the MIDI velocity?
Mostly not on that stuff. Yeah,
so it's not just like if he hits the pad hard. I'm visualizing like a gong that sends a MIDI note, and like the harder he hits the gong, the more the video blows.
Totally, yeah. That's definitely something that's doable. But in our,
if I see a gong next tour, I'll know where it came.
We have a gong that has been on every tour.
If I see a gong that controls the video via MIDI specifically.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of people think our gong does, but it's more manual than that with the actual gong.
Sure. You got to have a manual gong.
Yes.
Have you ever messed around with Resolume actually controlling lighting fixtures? And side question, can you talk about your relationship with the LD? Like, how much do you guys work on designs together? Is there any actual technical integration between the two?
There is not really any integration as far as MIDI lines or controls going back and forth.
He can't, like, black you out.
No. Yeah. He knows where the button is to
if you wanted to walk over. Walk
over and black me out. But yeah, we just kind of integrate everything on our own as we just kind of progress through shows and stuff like that, where it's like in the Flaming Lips world. I guess I've been touring with them for 7-8 years now. I think in that time we've had 2 production rehearsals.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So basically every show we do is the equivalent of like a production production rehearsal. Like,
Who's the lighting team?
The lighting team is, there's a guy, Michael Arch, who's our main LD now and also taking over a lot of the production production stuff.
And has he been with you guys? Like, does he predate you, or is he newer?
No. He is newer. He came in during that kind of same transition phase, like 2012, 2013. This guy, Dan Hadley. I don't know if you know him. He's like a lighting designer. He's worked with the Foo Fighters and a bunch of stuff for a long time. But basically, he came in to kind of design a rig and. You know, the Flaming Lips lighting rig up until that point was very, very like basic, just like strobes, strobes, blinders, and like a couple Vipers or something like that. So yeah, that Dan Hadley came in and kind of did the first version of like a redesign of like, hey, there's these things called Sharpies now. Like, let's try and like use them.
I actually read the PLSN article about when they did the, hey, Sharpies are cool now. Let's try them out. Yeah,
totally.
There, for our listeners, there's a PLSN article about Flaming Lips' rig. I think this is like a 15, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so Michael Arch, we all call him Arch.
Yeah.
Came out on that as a tech from TMS, which is a lighting company in Omaha where we rent all our gear from for each tour, our lighting package and all that. And he just, you know, quickly became one of the solid of the guys, crew and all that. And then a couple years later, just ended up being the one to kind of take over that rig and has been working on it and designing and programming. Most shows since then. The show you saw was Pete Marchio, who's normally our lighting tech.
Yeah.
Who
subbing for
somewhat
the day,
reluctantly comes out to front of house and runs it. I mean, he's amazing at it. He kills it. But he's like, this isn't where I'm comfortable. I just want to be like making sure everything's working.
Yeah. Well, in my after I saw the show, in my week or so of researching Resolume, I was talking to my buddy Max Lennox. Hi, Max, if you're listening. And he was talking, and I would love to maybe see this in your guys' show, about how in Resolume you can actually add, like, say, like a BI or a high pixel fixture and map the content out to the light rig. And that was like, oh, man, that's awesome. So it'd be really cool. I mean, you've got all these LED products on stage now. Do you have aspirations to send content to the lighting desk ever?
I think in our world, there's already so much going on. It would be more like,
whoa, man, calm down.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be more like in a general sense, like doing that, especially I think for like, in my mind, like smaller shows, like being able to have a kind of DIY video rig on stage and then have other LED fixtures that are all kind of controlled off that same thing and be able to do that in a super streamlined fashion, I think would be great. Like even just not having a lighting console at all and just having everything run off these
classic video guy. No, get rid of the lighting console.
Yes.
I have actually a question on here. Do you have things that you hate that LDs often do? Maybe a political answer if you can.
Not in particular. Like most of the times I would say I cringe at stuff is just, you know, seeing gobo effects spinning around, like actually focused on something, and that just being like a, Wayne would call it a used car lot kind of vibe. Like,
yeah. You mean like where the gobo's pointed at something and just spinning and looking stupid?
Yes. Where it's like, some shape that's
Things that, or what about things that when you're at other shows, like what are video things that you don't like seeing, or LED things that you don't like seeing?
Really, Yeah, I'm just kind of bored with all the like super high resolution virtual like 3D.
Yeah.
3D robot shapes moving in and out of each other and all that stuff. Like, I don't know. For me, stuff that's technically like two dimensional and just weird kind of like shapes floating around, that's always had more of like a trippy effect or like something, I don't know, something that speaks to me more than things that are actually like rendered out in 3D and spinning around and stuff like that. It's just kind of, for me, that distracts from things more than it adds a lot of the time.
I want to ask about rainbows. There's a lot in the show I saw. There's a lot of, not necessarily, I mean, there is a big inflatable rainbow, but I really mean more like using all the colors. Does that come from your aesthetic, or is that just part of the Flaming Lips culture?
I think they've, at this point, blended into something that's, I don't even know where one starts and ends
the
anymore.
Same, one and the same, yes.
Anymore, but no, it's definitely Flaming Lips have always had this sort of rainbow vibe and color scheme and all that. So we've definitely, you know, dove into that pretty head on and keep using that. But it's something I love too, and especially as just the utilization of all the LED stuff. It's kind of a natural thing to be as like one of the defaults.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had this moment where I was, you know, I mean, Thievery had a day set, but I was sitting there in the morning doing my programming, you know, getting everything ready, and the Lips sound check started, and you know, like I had been a fan for a long time, but I'd never seen them, and I kind of had maybe forgotten about them recently, and I got so excited like when they started playing those tunes, and I just was like not prepared at all for like the visual like party. It's like confetti and. Cryo and then like just full-blown video rainbows. I thought the show was so much fun, and the rainbow just goes so well with that
feel of it. It's just a natural fit somehow. Yeah. Plus, I also like, love the way like the Flaming Lips show starts with like, all right, here's everything we got, like right out of the gate.
He's like shooting the like little confetti cannon, and it's very really cool show. I guess, what's the craziest idea you and or Wayne has ever had?
The craziest idea?
Like, has he ever been like, I want to do this, and you're like, dude, we can't do that. Or maybe you did do it. Like, what's...
I mean, yeah, I guess the one, like, napkin sketch thing that pretty much all our show ideas and versions of everything come from texting napkin sketches back and forth and these weird things. But I guess the one thing that we haven't fully accomplished yet is Wayne had this vision of him starting in the middle of like an LED screen and basically like stretchy strands of LEDs that kind of connect to him somehow and then like follow him as he moves to the front of the stage.
Like almost, I know what you're saying, being wire, it's like a rubbery. Like,
so yeah, some weird LED HR Geiger kind of scene where he's like morphing out of the video screen. So we haven't been able to make the physical reality of things quite cooperate with that.
Is it safe to assume that you were fully involved in the whole Miley Cyrus thing set piece with the big it was more than just with Miley, but the whole I don't know, it was like a dress almost.
When the Miley show, she was in this weird kind of like stripper pole LED cage kind of set piece.
Definitely
designed and put that whole thing together for that.
The when they did like Tonight Show or SNL or something, Wayne came out with the like huge.
Oh yeah. So that there's been so many eras and
there's been so many projects.
So that was like the LED cape.
Yeah. Was that a napkin sketch as well?
Oh yeah, everything starts as a napkin sketch.
Awesome. I mean, we're literally talking napkin sketches here, or does he like draw on his phone or something?
Definitely no like digital drawing on the phone. It might not always be a napkin. It might be some paper. Hotel stationery or a yellow notepad. Paper would be like Wayne's actual favorite medium. But yeah, it's whatever's at hand.
You know, I know this is probably not a reality, but I'd love to see a coffee table book of all those, you know.
That actually could be a good one.
Have you guys talked about anything like that, like putting your work in a book?
Not necessarily. Another thing we haven't touched on yet is we actually are now doing this revolving art installation that has been to various museums. And
when you say we, is that...
That's Flaming Lips. Oh, so okay. It's like me and Wayne and another few people who are like the team for like building that in each place.
Yeah.
But it's basically this sculpture that Wayne came up with basically, and then I do the whole interior.
Okay.
It's almost like two installations in one. There's this whole sculpture. It's a giant head.
Yeah.
The foam rubber, like a silicone tongue and inside of the mouth and all that. And you crawl into this giant head. Inside is a crazy audiovisual like installation where it's like a 20-minute piece of music. And it's kind of like a micro version of our show where like everything that happens visually inside is connected to what's going on in the music and all that. And that's like a whole sequenced crazy thing, but it's the same sort of LEDs technology, all that stuff.
Is there a website for that, or where can people see it?
The next place it's going to is Meow Wolf.
I'm there next weekend.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You're gonna.
Is it there now?
No, we're installing it there at the end of April.
Man, yeah. I mean, I've been so pumped to go there, and I finally have a gig there. So, yeah.
Well, it's a shame you're just gonna miss that. I'm excited to go there too.
I'm also a huge Game of Thrones fan, and George Martin financed that whole building. So
I had no idea.
Yeah. Is there a website? You know,
there is. I don't
or maybe a project name people can Google.
It's just called The King's Mouth.
The King's Mouth.
Yeah, and so you'll come up with a lot of stuff if you just hit that in a search. But yeah, we just took the last one. It was in Portland. Was the last place
Oregon?
It was at. Yes.
Yeah. Nice.
I was in Baltimore for like a year. It's just really cool museum there called the Visionary Arts Museum. Mm-hmm. It's this whole crazy kind of folk and outsider artist. Mm. Centered museum, and one of the curators there kind of saw this piece and really wanted. That was kind of the beginning of it turning into a thing that wasn't just this weird piece at the Flaming Lips headquarters. Yeah. That was like the first.
Oh, so at first it was just like a fun project for you guys?
At first, I wasn't even involved in the very first versions of it. At first, it started as a room or like a little kind of area with a projector screen that people would like go and crawl underneath the projector screen and like watch these videos that were like made to look like you're like underneath a dance floor, like just some weird stuff like that. And it was just in this plywood circle that they built for that projector screen. And little by little, they started adding more decorations and stuff to that circle and putting blobs and shapes on it. And eventually, of course, as everything does, turns into some anthropomorphized thing, and it became the king's head, this giant sculpture. So basically, one of the curators from that museum came to a party, an event at the Womb, it's called.
Yeah.
Flaming Lips kind of headquarters in OKC, and it's like, man, what if we got this in the museum?
Yeah.
And that turned into the whole thing. Wayne's like, well, we can't really, like, the way this thing is built in here, it was just like so many layers of stuff on top of that original box or whatever. Like, there's no way you could actually move this. We're going to have to build a new one from scratch to like take it anywhere. And why not, instead of the projectors, like do a crazy thing with LEDs? And we started, you know, doing some napkin sketches and all that. And
then it was created.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys definitely seem like you have a strong, I was going to say Burning Man vibe, but just the art, almost like the art student vibe, you know? I love it.
Like, yeah. We're definitely.
It's kind of like, we want to break all the rules. We're not like trying to like that thing is just in the office. They weren't like trying to sell it. Like, we're just making it.
Yeah. I mean, basically that's our whole mantra, is just that's like awesome. make the stuff that we want to see in the world. White trash, rednecks, earthworms eat the ground.
Are you burning out?
motherfucking hip-hop
child. Okay, well, let's do the strobe round.
So, all right.
I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions. You can take as long as you want to answer, but if you want to just fire off answers, you can do that as well. So, favorite simple geometric shape?
I'd say a triangle.
Triangle. If all humans could no longer see one of the seven colors of the rainbow, and you had to pick which one it would be, which would you choose?
If all humans could no longer see?
Yeah. Like, the color's still there scientifically, but we can no longer see it.
That's a tough one. I'm going to say, God, orange?
Every answer is offensive to me.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Favorite Flaming Lips song visually?
Right now, I would say it's a song called How.
Off the new record?
Off the new record. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is a very, very, like, pretty and dynamic song. And it's one of the ones where it's kind of completely free form on my end. So it's like there's most of this stuff has almost no video clips or anything triggering it. It's all just like playing with the crazy layered effects parameters. So due to the nature of that, it turns out completely differently every night, depending on exactly.
So sometimes you're like, yes, this is
exactly, like, no! Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Is that mostly magic?
That is mostly all Resolume, actually. Okay. So it's just, well, it's a combination of the two. So that is magic, triggering some basic like visualization stuff for the synthesizer going in. Mm-hmm. And then there's drums, like sample sounds that are triggering clips in Resolume through the MIDI triggers. Mm-hmm. And then the rest is all just layers of like feedback, kind of making these organic shapes kind of flow in and out. And that's one of the few times in Resolume where I use the actual transition time control. So you can kind of have these different scenes. And in that one, it actually takes like a second or two to slowly fade in between these two scenes. And just due to the nature of like all the combinations of those things, it being a good, pretty dynamic song, having that as the basis for running it and being different every night, that's basically my current favorite too.
Nice. How about favorite Flaming Lips song musically?
I don't know. I'd say The Abandoned Hospital Ship would definitely be one of my favorites. That is what, for a while, we were doing that as the intro to the show.
Okay.
And just, yeah, the dynamics and everything in that is definitely, yeah, the whole, yeah, it's definitely one of my all-time favorites. I'm bad at picking absolute favorites sort of guy. I always have been, but we'll go with that.
Best post-show food.
Best post-show food. I'd say Philly cheesesteaks in Philly.
Are you a Jim's guy or Gino's, Pat's?
There's, God, I wouldn't be able to actually come up with a favorite one.
Just,
I know that,
just as long as it's legit.
Yes, yeah. As long as it's legit.
You have a, how about a favorite drink to see in the front of house cooler?
They're supposed to be front of house coolers.
I've had some tours where it's like it's a thing, and there are others where I like, is there a front of house cooler? And the TM like, what are you talking about? Get out of here, man.
Yeah, meaning we've never had a front of house cooler.
Or how about favorite drink to see in the green room?
I'd say bullet bourbon.
Nice. Least favorite city to visit on tour.
New York.
Because you live here?
Yes. Yeah,
that's a good answer. I love New York, but
it's also, I love you, New York, but it's the most difficult place to do a show of anywhere in the world.
To do a lot of things.
Yes.
Yeah. I always say that if you have a lot of money and you don't have to go in and out of it, New York is great. Yeah. Wayne Cohen's spirit animal.
I mean, the unicorn would be the obvious answer, but probably come up with something better.
I'll stick with unicorn. That's fine.
Yep.
Video software you'd use if you couldn't use Resolume?
Would probably be VDMX.
Most impactful or inspirational show of your youth? Concert or, you know, theater performance?
Let's see. I was lucky enough to get to see Nirvana when I was like a little kid.
That's awesome.
And that is still, yeah.
Was it, do you remember, was like visually stimulating at all, other than obviously the band?
No, I think it was like very, very bare bones, just park hands flashing around. It was like a benefit show too. So it wasn't even like,
yeah. Would you know what year that was?
It was 1994.
Wow. Near the end there. Do you have a favorite computer or video game? Do you play video games?
Really? I always say that they mostly lost me once they got past four buttons.
Sure.
So, Tetris is my favorite video game.
That's the theme for this episode, Star Trek or Star Wars?
You know, I'm not, like, obsessed with either one or anything like that. I would say Star Trek, actually.
Okay.
Because I have, Star Trek is the one I actually have memories of, like, going with my dad when I was a little kid to see Star Trek IV, when they go back save the whales. Which is like the most corny thing, but I have this such great memory.
Invisible glass, or invisible steel. If you had to pick one, and you can't pick, you know, what you're doing now, would you do lights, lasers, or sound? Which I didn't realize that sound was going to be a possible answer, but given your background, I think that. Like, let's say there's another clone of you shows up on Flaming Lips tour, and you're already doing your current job, you know?
I don't know. I'd say it might be lights.
Good answer. This is called the light side.
So. Yeah, yeah. Just because of one of my strengths and problems is I've always just been interested in too many things at once, always, ever. Mm-hmm. But I've already, you know, I've done front of house and done sound for a long time. So I think it's completely different technology and everything since like the last time I really did that seriously. So I'd be able to like learn a lot there. But I think with my experience with other stuff now, like actually learning my way around an MA and stuff like that would be just a good like challenge and like creative freedom in the way like there's so much you can do with all that stuff. And it's completely, I love the fact that like it's set up kind of as a different instrument for every person using it, way more than like a digital audio console or anything like is. It's just kind of tailored to you. So,
well, maybe we can do a think tank exchange at some point.
Absolutely.
I know MA. That's one thing I know for sure.
Absolutely.
Best concert you've seen this decade?
I'd say my personal favorite would be Portishead, right when they first kind of came back on the scene. It was like that. And then Coachella, there was like Coachella and a few other shows they played like right when they kind of came back after putting out a great record and then doing this tour, but like having not been heard of for 20 years before that. And just the impact of that show, just seeing that live for the first time after like growing up with that music and all that was very impactful for me.
Do you have a favorite? I'm thinking like rave era here. Do you have a favorite EDM subgenre from back then? Like maybe one that you used to play?
Really, it was, you know, for those of us old enough, before EDM, it was IDM.
Yes, of course.
It's a very strange thing, actually, for like EDM to pop up as this term. It's this brand new thing. It's called electronic dance music.
Yeah. Intelligent dance music is what we were referring to.
Stuff like, you know, always my favorite stuff was this. The crazy technical production stuff like Square Pusher.
When you said IDM, I was like, is it going to be Square Pusher or Aphex Twin?
So I love both of those, but as far as like what I would play during that era would be I would actually like play and mix Square Pusher records and do
like
crazy stuff.
Hard Normal Daddy was like,
yes,
so
it's right,
awesome.
It's right there next to you.
Well, I don't, maybe this is related, but if you had a time machine that holds a semi's worth of modern gear, what one concert or event would you travel back in time and add visuals to?
That's a tough one for sure. I would say go back to some like Sid Barrett era Pink Floyd acid freak out in some weird.
It's a great answer. I think somebody said Pompeii. I think that might have been an answer. Because, you know, like, they didn't have any production, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, this one's... Think of this in an esoteric way, not in a future-capable data way. Your all-time favorite input cable. HDMI, RCA, DMX, Ethernet. I don't know what you're... It's up to you, like, why you pick this cable, but...
Wow, that's a all-time favorite input cable. I'm going Ethercon.
Ethercon. That's Ethercon's nice.
Because at this point that connection can basically do just about anything that you can possibly do with the connection. And that's the one
you can even do power over Ethernet now. So
you can do, absolutely. Yeah.
For those who don't know, Ethercon is probably Cat5 or Cat6 with a RJ45 plug on the end, but then inside of a what do they call that?
It's an XLR jack, basically.
Yeah, Neutrik connector.
Like, feels the same as plugging in a mic cable, DMX cable, anything like that. But
so when you plug it in, it clicks in. And,
yeah.
And it kind of shields the Ethernet cable.
Yes. Yeah. So, the combination of those things, I'm going with that one.
If people want to find out more about you, is there a website, Twitter, anything like that?
I'm very terrible at the... self-promotion, social media, all that sort of thing. Come see Flaming Lips. I'm on Instagram. I'm Sachismo, just an old high school nickname, S-A-C-H-I-S-M-O. Mm-hmm. I don't post much, but you can follow me on there or send me a message if you're interested about doing some crazy custom LED stuff or anything like that.
Do you have other projects? You mentioned you had a restaurant that you just...
Yes, I'm actually... working with a bunch of friends now who started a company called Smooth Technology. They have a website, smooth.technology. And we're kind of collaborating on all sorts of stuff in every kind of iteration of this technology and stuff like that. So we just did a custom LED restaurant lighting installation where it's all like lights that have their built-in wireless controllers. And we have like a little... remote control that it can dial in color temperatures and play effects throughout the restaurant and all that sort of stuff.
There's nothing like when you're ready to check out, you click a button and it blinks red or
nothing like that yet, but it's all a work in progress.
Do you have any tips for people who are starting out in the visual audio or in the visual live production realm?
Really just to go out and do it as much as possible is like the only basic rule. I think one of the main things I've learned from being with the Flaming Lips and like seeing and now being integrated with their whole style of production and all that is you got to kind of give up your own perfectionism and whatever stuff would normally hold you back. Like I'm in a sense a perfectionist at heart, but there's like you learn that
You got to let that go.
Going with that completely means you're just never going to do anything. Like trying stuff, maybe failing, maybe having a little bit of success within your failure. Like that's how it all happens and how you get better and all that. So it's basically just going out and doing it as much as possible is really the only thing and not being afraid to work your ass off at it.
Big thank you to Sachem for being on the show and for all the guidance he provided me into getting into Resolume. If you like the podcast and you want to hear more, you can support us over at patreon.com/thelightside. Thanks for listening.